Hi, friends. I'm Emily Lay, and you're listening to the Simplified Podcast. If you're struggling with overwhelm and thirsty for a fresh start, you've come to the right place. Right now, I'm inviting you to slow down, take a breath, and join me to explore how to move through the complicated parts of life so you can spend more time on what truly matters most. Have you heard the news? You can watch every Simplified Podcast episode over on YouTube. You can join me there for some exclusive material you won't hear on the audio version of the show. Plus, you can watch me talking right to you and also to our guests who come on the show. And Team Simplified has all kinds of tactical videos to help you organize your life, to create calm and clear clutter, to get the most out of your Simplified planner, and so much more. So head over to youtube.com/simplifiedbyemilylay and subscribe today so you never miss a video. Friends, can I tell you something? So normally I come on the podcast pretty upbeat and ready to tackle the world and talk through all the things, but today it feels a little bit hard to do that. Lately, like many of you, I've been feeling the weight of the world on my shoulders, and I know that you can relate. When you pay attention to what's going on around the world, and you're a deeply feeling human like me, it's hard not to feel weighed down. We've faced a lot of the same battles for the past year and a half, and others for much longer. And on top of it all, we're divided on how to tackle everything. We prioritize being right over being in relationship. Trust me, I get why people are so passionate about what they believe in. And when it comes down to it, I think we all basically want the same thing. We want a world where we have the freedom to choose how to live, and we want access to the opportunities that help us do just that. We also want our children to have the same freedom and access to opportunities. But when someone fundamentally disagrees on what that freedom and access to opportunity looks like, it can feel like a threat to the well-being of our family, our values, and even our way of life. We get scared we're going to lose those privileges. When someone denies access to that freedom and opportunity to someone else, when they deny dignity and human rights to someone else, it can seem like we're having a battle of hate itself. We feel angry. Of course we do. And when we feel angry, it's hard not to lash out and act on those big feelings. But in the middle of all of this turmoil, in the midst of all the feelings and battles we're fighting for ourselves and our loved ones, I think we forget that we're being watched all the time. Little ones are watching how we react to the situations placed in front of us. They're listening to what we say to other adults, to them, and even ourselves. Sometimes we forget that as much as we don't understand what's going on in the world, children have even less context and capacity for it than we do. As frustrated and anxious as we are all about it, children have feelings about it as well. When you were a kid, what made you feel afraid? When something was going on in the world, when your parents watched the news and you weren't quite sure what was going on, but you knew something wasn't quite right, how did it make you feel? Maybe it was the Challenger. Maybe it was the Gulf War. Maybe it was a contentious presidential election, Columbine, 9/11. I don't know about you, but I remember the way my parents reacted to these kinds of events, outside of anything they said to my brother and me. I remember what we watched. I remember how they absorbed what was going on in the world, even if I didn't understand what was happening. We watched our parents watch the hard stuff, and then we watched how they handled it. So I'm going to pivot for a second, but go with me here. If you have a dog and something happens out of the ordinary, like a loud noise outside the house, what does your dog do? Typically, they look at you, their owner, to see how they should react to the situation. If you're freaking out, your dog will freak out. But if you're calm, your dog will relax because they know there's nothing to freak out about. Humans are the same way. Emotions are contagious, especially with our children. I'm not saying we shouldn't have them, but what I'm saying is something my guest today has written a lot about, that the adult needs to be the calmest person in the room. So I get it. When you don't know what's going on, when information that affects the safety of your family changes by the minute, when opinions and legislature affect the decisions you make for the well-being of your family, of course you're going to feel stuff. The reason you feel something, a whole lot of somethings, is because you're a human. And it can feel overwhelming and bewildering to try to make decisions that affect the safety of your family, and especially your kids, when you don't understand what's going on and the information you're getting changes so quickly. What I'm asking you today is to think about how you're making those decisions. Because how you make those decisions, how you're behaving about it all, is something your children are watching and absorbing. Many of them are absorbing our anxiety and our anger. They see it on our faces when we're scrolling through our phones, taking in so much news, seeing alerts or hearing updates on things. They hear it in the way that we talk with family members at the holiday table who hold opinions that are different from our own. They feel our voices tremble when they ask about something or someone they know at school who's contracted COVID. In those moments, you're going to feel something, but don't forget that you are an adult. And as my guest, Sissy Goff, says, it's the adult's job to be the calmest person in the room. Because here's the reality. Our kids are more anxious than ever before. And if, as a parent, you have anxiety, your kids are 7 times more likely to struggle with it themselves. That is a staggering statistic, and we're going to talk about that more in a minute. But friends, Sissy is the perfect person to join me today, and I could not be more thrilled that she is here to talk to us about how to help our kids manage their anxiety and big emotions. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Sissy is the director of child and adolescent counseling at Daystar Counseling Ministries in Nashville, where she works alongside her counseling assistant slash pet therapist, Lucy the Havanese dog. Sissy is a sought-after speaker for parenting events and the author of 12 books, including a bestseller called Raising Worry-Free Girls. She writes for all kinds of publications, but you should definitely check out her podcast, Raising Boys and Girls. It is so, so good. Before I welcome Sissy on today, let me say this. Kids need to feel safe, period. And right now, cultivating a home that's a safe place for them to land, for them to take off their masks and ask questions over baked lemon chicken and mashed potatoes, to climb into a soft bed at night with clean hair and pajamas and a story or two, that's more important than ever. It's not about creating the perfect home while you're trying to deal with their emotions and your own when the ground's being shifted beneath your feet. It's the trying that matters. It's about whatever you can do today to help them and you feel a bit more safe. I am so grateful that Sissy agreed to come on here today. I just loved this Instagram post that she shared and sent her a quick message and said, please, please, please come on the podcast. We have got to talk about kids and anxiety, and I would just love to hear your take on things. So I am so grateful to have her. Here we go. This is my conversation with therapist Sissy Goff. Well, first of all, hi. Thank you so much for being here and for doing this with me. I just respect you so much and the work that you do and the words that you write. And so I'm excited to have you here.
Oh, Emily, thank you. I'm so honored that you would ask me to be on here. And if I haven't gotten to meet folks, I'm Sissy Goff and I am based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm a therapist at a place called Daystar Counseling. And I have been counseling kids and families there since 93, wow, which makes me feel really old, but I'm really grateful to get to do that work. And then out of that, that's really my day job. And then in my spare time, I have gotten to travel and speak a good bit and write some books. And in the last few years, kind of the way things fell out pre-COVID, I ended up writing a book for little girls about anxiety, and then one for parents about anxiety, and then COVID hit. And I mean, we can talk about all these things, but became most concerned about adolescents, yeah, as that started. And so I have a more recent book about that. So that's kind of where I've landed a lot lately, is talking about anxiety, just because we're all anxious these days.
Oh my goodness. I personally have struggled with anxiety for a long time. And as a mom of 3 little ones, I have a 10-year-old and 2 6-year-olds, I can see it begin to manifest itself in them as they worry about the big things happening in our world right now.
Of course.
Especially my oldest. So I saw a post that you put up, but you mentioned in the post that as adults, our job is to be the calmest in the room. And it just stopped me in my scrolling tracks. And I thought, that is so true. Like our, and I'm seeing it in my own, but you know, kids everywhere. We are so worried. We are so scared. We are having to pivot often.
Yes.
And I was telling my mom the other day, like, I just feel like I am constantly making decisions that are based on information that's changing quickly, and it's been for 18 months now. And so if I'm feeling that, I know my kids are feeling it, the weight of all of it and just the sadness of all of it. So
yes,
talk to us a little bit about that post. It really stopped me in my tracks and made me like evaluate my presence in the room with my kids when they're asking the big and hard questions and when their worries are manifesting in, you know, tantrums or arguing or attitudes that come out of nowhere, you know?
Which happens so often, and we can sure talk about that, like how anxiety shows up, and it looks different than we would ever have guessed it looked. Yeah. And, you know, for so many of us, we weren't really necessarily in counseling when we were growing up.
Right,
our parents
right.
weren't talking to us about these things, and so we don't know so often. But that comment was actually born out of, so at Daystar, we see kids and we see adolescents, but we also do what are called parent consults, where we just meet with parents to kind of say, hey, this is where our kids are, kind of like a well visit for the pediatrician.
That.
So I was with this couple and he said, you know, in my business, what I have learned is as the leader, you are supposed to be the calmest person in the room. And he said, I guess that applies to parenting as well. And it just stayed with me so much. But I just kept thinking the degree of anxiety that we're feeling as grownups and the degree of anger that so many people are feeling,
yes.
no matter where you land in the political landscape.
Right.
has got to be spilling over into the lives of kids. And we were pre-pandemic, we were looking at 1 in 4 kids were dealing with anxiety, with girls twice as likely to deal with it as boys. The pandemic hit, now we were 1 in 3 a year ago. And I can't even imagine what the statistics, you know, there's no data yet on what they are right now, but I can't even imagine. But our anxiety as grownups, you know, kids are so intuitive, even if they're not saying it. And so they're picking up on whatever, not only whatever we're feeling, but whatever we're saying on the phone, however we're reacting to the news, they just watch everything. And so even if they're not mimicking exactly what you're saying or what you're doing emotionally, they're feeling the reverberations of that inside their little selves. And I keep worrying about kids in this season because, like you said, I mean, as grownups, we have the cognitive ability to process it and manage our emotions.
Right.
Our frontal lobes are finished developing. Theirs aren't. And so they don't know how to process this. And so if we're not regulating ourselves and checking ourselves and being aware of how we're even connecting to them in calmer places, there's no way they're going to be able to.
Oh my goodness. So very true. And it's, you know, as someone who has struggled with anxiety. In my house, we call it the worry monster. Like the worry monster kind of creeps
up. Yes, way to go.
Up.
That's what I have kids call it all the time.
Oh, you do?
That's awesome, Emily. Yes.
I feel so affirmed. Yeah, we call it the worry monster because it sneaks up. It sneaks up on my kids, especially at night. And I don't know where I heard this phrase, but once I heard that at night when you tuck your kids in, they need to unburden their souls. Like they need to like get all the things off of them so they can fall asleep. And so my kids, that's when they... You know, of course, it's when mom's the most tired, but it's that, you know, they decided that they need to like, okay, I'm worried about this. I have a question about this. This happened today. This, you know, what are we going to do about this? And with 3 of them, it's like, okay, wow, like you guys are carrying around so much. And for me, as someone who deals with it, I can recognize it easily in my kids. Like when they start to get anxious, I can recognize it. And for them, it just helps so much to like talk through it. But how do we recognize it in our kids? How do we recognize anxiety? I feel like sometimes it's super recognizable, but sometimes it's like it's manifesting itself in other not so obvious ways.
Yes, yes, you're exactly right. In the Raising Worry-Free Girls book, I talk about imploders or exploders and how most kids will lean one way or the other.
Yeah.
And so the exploders, we're going to see a lot of emotion from them. And, you know, it's fascinating in the parent consults. I would say if there's one emotion that parents talk about, especially with younger kids, it's anger.
Yeah.
And so often what I will do, you know, my first place I'll go with parents who are talking about that is to ask questions like, tell me when it's happening. What are the things that are triggering that in your child? And so often it'll be things like, well, she was expecting that we were going to do one thing after school, and then I changed the plan at the last minute.
Yep.
Or, you know, even I told him he had to go brush his teeth right now. And that intensity of the immediacy makes them panic.
Yep.
And so a lot of times it's transitions. It's when things are unpredictable, which bless kids' hearts. If they have anxiety right now and they're in school and out of school and masks and no masks and right. all the back and forth, you know, that's wreaking havoc on their little
the canceling
hearts.
Of and, plans left and right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So if you're seeing your child show a lot of anger, I think that's one of the best things we could do is really try and drill down underneath it to figure out when is this going on? And if it's times of unpredictability or transition, that means it's anxiety based. And so exploders are going to do that. Imploders, I see a whole lot of girls, but I think boys too, often firstborn kids. And, and I really am at the point where if I sit with parents and they have a girl that's their firstborn, I think she's just going to have a little bit of baseline anxiety.
Yeah.
And so those are the kids who...
I'm a firstborn girl.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. Me too. And I think those kids are the ones... It's so interesting statistically, even though girls have anxiety more, boys are taken in for treatment more.
Because
often for girls, they're the kids who we go to parent-teacher conferences and the teacher says, I wish every child in my class was like your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably exactly what they said to your parents when you were a kid, you know, because those girls are holding it in so much. They're imploding. They're hard on themselves. They're trying to stay below the radar. Please, everybody. Now, often they'll get in the car after school and it'll all come out with tears or anger
That's
or whatever.
So interesting.
But they're going to implode. And so I would say what either of those things can be indicators. Also, recurring tummy aches, headaches, you know, physical complaints that you take them to the doctor and the doctor says there is no medical explanation of this. Yes. Right. And then the last primary thing I would say is kids who ask endless questions. So even what you're talking about, Emily, at bedtime, you know, if they're saying, tell me what the schedule is tomorrow, what are we going to do? And then you answer the question and they go right back to the same question.
That's a light bulb for me.
Good.
My daughter is six and she's our, by 3 minutes, she's our youngest. But she always, and this has been going on for about a year now. If she doesn't have her eyes on me in the house, she will yell, like she'll be in the living room and I'll be in my office and she'll yell, Mom, I love you. I love you, Mom. I love you. And it's the first few times it's really sweet. And then you're like, Caroline, I'm right here. I know that you're just trying to figure out where I am. And if you hear my voice, that's so it's like her way of asking endless questions, but it is nonstop. And it is, it's that it is an anxiety thing, I think, with her where she's afraid.
Checking.
Yeah. And just constantly checking in. That's so interesting.
Well, and it's interesting because research says we should never answer more than 5 questions about the same topic because it's not helpful to them because it's never about the topic. You know, it's really just anxiety's kind of hijacked her brain in that moment. She's not even necessarily, it's not about where you are. It's about, I feel anxious and I don't know what to do with myself. And Emily, you've already done, I mean, I have kind of my first 3 go-tos with kids about anxiety.
Yeah.
You've already done one of the first 3 go-tos of talking about the worry monster and naming it. Because the helpful thing about that is, you know, I think at some point you could walk in the room with her and I would definitely be in the room with her and back to that idea of being the calmest person in the room in a really calm place to say, honey, I don't think you're even that worried about me. I think right now it's your worry monster talking. And what do you want to say back to the worry monster?
And then she
can learn to say, my mom's here. I'm okay. There's nothing to worry about. And she, you know, self-talk is one of the biggest things we do in therapy. And that's what she's learning in that moment is positive self-talk and talking herself down from her worries. So you've already named it with the worry monster. And the cool thing about that is, you know, anxiety is absolutely treatable, but it is based on, and you know this, I mean, every child, every grown-up I've ever talked to who has anxiety has a few things in common. They're really bright. Mm-hmm. They're really conscientious. They try hard. They care so much. And we're not going to change that about someone's temperament.
No.
And so what's going to happen over time is your daughter, or if you're listening, you have a son who has anxiety. Right now, it's about being away from you because she's the age that you are her security.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 years, it's going to be about displeasing the teacher, or it's going to be about throwing up. I can't tell you how many kids come in for counseling about recurring fear about throwing up.
It's kind
of the scariest thing they can imagine happening developmentally. And so when you have named it the worry monster, in 2 years, when she's obsessively thinking about throwing up or being afraid to go to a sleepover, you can say, sounds like the worry monster's back. what worked with him last time, because the same things work no matter what form he takes.
Wow, that's fascinating. My oldest, his thing right now is, Mom, you're going to pick me up in Carline, right? Yes, honey. I have picked you up in Carline every day since you started school.
Yes.
However many years ago, but yes, I will pick you up in Carline. But yeah, that is his thing. He's like, you're just making sure you're going to be, I don't know why my kids are so afraid I'm not going to show up somewhere. I'm going to disappear. But that is a thing.
It's just separation anxiety is really what that is. And at their age, that's the most normal form it's going to take. And then it's going to shift.
Oh, wow. But that makes so much sense to me.
It's such a compliment to your kids that they worry about it. It means they're really cool kids. I say that to kids. It's one of the first things I say to kids in my office, and little ones will smile so big and say, yeah, that's me. You know, I love that.
Absolutely.
But I think you need to say that to them.
Oh, that's so great. And I'm glad to know that naming the worry monster was a good thing. Sometimes I wondered, like, is that a good thing? But
it's
awesome. I think recognizing that this is not who you are. Like, this is this worry monster that's inside, and we just have to learn how to talk to the worry monster. And that positive self-talk, that is so helpful.
If you are looking for a way to make your weekly meal planning even easier, I have the perfect solution for you. Green Chef. Green Chef is the number one meal kit for eating well. And they pack every kit with the fresh organic veggies and high quality proteins you want for your family. Green Chef takes care of the meal planning, the grocery shopping, and even some of the food prep. We've been in back to school mode for the past couple weeks, and I can't tell you how much time Green Chef has saved me. They take away the what's for dinner question, and that alone is worth its weight in gold. And on top of all of this, Green Chef makes it easy to make healthy meals that are so delicious. Everybody in the Lay House loves them. My very favorite, well, and my kids' very favorite, is the feta cheeseburgers. So delicious. So go get started with your own Green Chef box today. Go to greenchef.com/simplified100 and use code SIMPLIFIED100 to get $100 off, including free shipping. One more time, go to greenchef.com/simplified100 and use code SIMPLIFIED100 to get $100 off and free shipping. Green Chef, the number one meal kit for eating well.
One of the coolest things that I think you have in your tool belt is creating a calm down kit for kids. So talk to me about this.
Well, you know, I think if there's anything besides kids having a confident kind of voice inside of themselves, I think the other thing that we really need to give kids right now are coping strategies. I mean, we all need to have coping strategies. And so a calm down kit is basically creating kind of a tangible sense of coping strategies. And they can even put it in a pencil pouch or something and take it with them on the way to school. Yeah. But it's, you know, kids are fascinating in that they know the things that help themselves. And so I encourage a lot of parents just sitting around the dinner table, have everybody, parents included, come up with a list of 10 things that really help when you get anxious. And so some of those things you can make, some of them, it's a list. You can make cards that they can flip and put it in their calm down kit. Mm-hmm. But things like stress balls and fidget tools and things like that, that they can have with them. So when they start to feel anxious at school, they can pull those things out, even under their desk where the teacher doesn't know that's what they're doing, or the other kids don't. And they have things just in their hands that they can do to work out some of their anxiety.
And
so I think it's just so important.
Like, yes. You're safe. You're okay. When Brady's my oldest, when he started VPK, so this is ages ago, he was really nervous about going to school for that long. You know, it was a long day. I think it was like 9 to 2. And I was dropping him off in Carline, and he was just really, really, really nervous about it. And I had a little piece of paper, like a receipt or something, in the car. And I took it out and I tore a piece of it off, and I wrote on the little paper, "I love you, buddy. I'll see you at 2. Or I'll be here to pick you up at 2. And he folded it and put it in his pocket. And I said, whenever you get afraid or worried or scared that, you know, what's going to happen next, just put your hand in your pocket and feel it. And remember, I love you and I'll be here at 2. And I still have it. And he took it to school with him for like 2 weeks until he got comfortable. But yeah, like having that little thing.
You are hitting it out of the park.
Thank you.
Such great instincts. I mean, seriously, you're doing things that I tell families to do all the time. I have told a lot of families, just as school's getting started, to make bracelets where the mom has one, the dad has one, and the child has one. And you can tell your child, anytime you think about me, touch your bracelet, and I'll have mine on and I can touch mine too. Not that you know really when they're doing that, but they don't know that, you know? And so something like that, we call them transitional objects, but something like that, that they have that connects you to them, even when you're not there, is something that I recommend to parents all the time. And you were already doing it. Way to go.
I think having my own anxiety, like it just, you kind of innately know, like, okay, this is what you need. Well, one of the things, I've been talking to a lot of mom friends lately about how Brian and I want to raise our kids to be very aware. We've always been very transparent and very honest with them. They hear a bad word, we tell them what it means. They, you know, have a question about where babies come from, we'll explain it in an age-appropriate way. So we've just always been very, very open with them. My dad always says, you're raising adults, not children. So we keep that in our heads. But I want to make sure we're raising kids who are resilient and knowledgeable and all of that. But I also sometimes just want to put them in a bubble and protect them from the whole wide world and all the bad things. I made the mistake the other day of turning on the news while we were eating breakfast before school. Just, it was too much. It was Afghanistan and Haiti and just tragic, awful things happening in the world. And I immediately turned it off, but it was on long enough for each of their little brains to be filled with lots of worries. I mean, I know there's not like a hard and fast rule for these kinds of things, but do you have any advice on how parents can kind of strike the balance between protecting our kids and also raising kids who are knowledgeable and do have their questions answered?
Yes. Yes. That's such a great question, especially right now, because it's so tough and there's so much tragedy going on in our world.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think I love your thoughts on that, because as parents, I mean, the first thing I would say is you absolutely want to be the source. You don't want your kids to hear about anything outside of the home where you can't, you know, help them feel safe in the midst of it. And so I think if there's something that you know that they're going to hear about or be exposed to somewhere else, to tell them a little bit about what's going on. But with younger kids, especially, we want to be really concrete. So, and tell them, I mean, what I recommend to parents is say like one sentence about what's going on, or even start with a question like, tell me what you've been hearing that's going on in our world these days. And so they say back to you what they're hearing. And then I would keep asking questions. And honestly, this is true when you're talking to kids about grief. This is true when you're talking to kids about sex. I mean, really, divorce, anything that feels like, I don't know how much to say, but I want to have the conversation with them. And I feel like they need to know something.
Yeah.
That to start really concretely and then let their questions drive the conversation, because often out of our own emotion or our own sense of panic, we say too much.
Oh,
and
yeah,
we say information that they can't even handle.
Right. 100%. Yep.
And they have this amazing ability to ask for the questions that they're ready for the responses to, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so they will say, well, you know, this is what I've heard at school. Well, tell me how you feel about that. What are the things that you're worried about with that? And then to each question, I would give a 1 to 2 sentence, really concrete answer, where again, you're not giving them, you're not filling in every blank, because they're not thinking about the blanks.
Right.
They're thinking very concretely. And so that way, you know, and then I would keep checking in. Okay. How do you feel about that? You know, just,
yeah.
And then I would even revisit whatever it is you've talked to them about. Have you been thinking about that? Are you worried about it? And in anything like that too, to go back to, but I'm here with you. We're going to be okay. You know, if you have a faith that you feel like you can enter into in that moment, like that's an important time to talk about that. But any conversation that is anxiety producing, we always want to come back to a sense of groundedness with kids too and safety. And that's where we land with them, because I think they can end up getting stuck in that worry of the unknown or the unpredictability of it. Yeah. And so
I read a quote, I can't remember who it was, the other day said, kids are not afraid of information. Kids are afraid of being alone with information. And
gosh, I love that.
Yeah, having kind of that soft place to land, that safe, trusted space where they can come and ask questions. I tend to be the over-explainer. Like, you know, let me give you like the almanac details of what's happening, you know, wherever. And my mom was the one who gave me the advice that said, just answer the questions they're asking. And, you know, maybe don't give them like the 38-year-old explanation of certain things, because they can't. They're not able the way that we are to kind of compartmentalize and break it down and yes. know. But I also love what you said about closing that out, that conversation or that answer out with, you are safe and we are here and that yes. kind of thing.
And you can come to me with any question you ever have about anything. Where you're saying, again, I'm the source.
I am the source. I am the soft place to land. My parents did yes. a really good job of instilling that in me and saying, you can ask me any question ever, even if it's embarrassing or it's scary, you can absolutely ask. And I did. I mean, there are conversations I had with my parents growing up that, like, I'm glad that they made that, you know, made me feel safe to where I didn't have to be alone with my questions or my concerns. Brian That's and I awesome. Have always said that we want our home to feel like the soft place to land for our kids, that there's so much going on in the world that we can't control, but we can control like what happens here within our home. Do you have any advice for parents in terms of like things that we can do in our home or focus on in our home to create that soft, safe place for our kids?
You know, I think the two things that probably stand out to me right now, one is, I mean, I wish every family had a feelings chart. I think feelings charts are so important.
Yeah, and, I just heard about this the other day.
Really? Well, yeah. You know, I haven't gotten to it yet, but I'm going to send you books and I'm going to send you a feelings chart. We have one for sale on our website. But we recommend to parents to pass them around the dinner table and everybody pick three things you felt today. And so that way, feelings are just a natural part of what's going on around yeah. your house. And not only are you modeling for kids, like we feel a full range of emotions, yep. but you're also saying in that moment, we are safe. You are safe with whatever emotion you're going to express. And so if you felt angry today, that's okay too. And if we circle back around to anxiety, I think so often anxiety happens for kids, parents, like we're talking about conscientious folks who don't want to express anger, disappointment, mm-hmm. hurt. And so they stuff their emotions and they shift over and kind of morph into anxiety. And so you're offsetting a lot of those things for them to talk about their emotions. So that would be one. And then the other right now, I think that's so important is I think we need to have a sense of play with the kids in our lives. We need to be enjoying them because we yes. just are living in so much intensity. And like we've been talking about, so much anxiety producing events, so many, and so much sadness that I think it can ripple over into them. And so for us to turn off the news, put away the phones, mm-hmm. go for bike rides, walk the dog, draw, you know, whatever it yeah. is we can do, play games together, laugh, have a dance party in the kitchen, any mm-hmm. of those things, we just need to be enjoying them. Yeah. And I think that reminds them that we're safe too. And that we like them, that we believe in them, all of those things.
I love that we like them. Oh, I think that's so important. Last Friday, our kids have to wear masks at school, and the whole school does. And they've done such a good job with them, and they really don't complain at all about it. But I was going to go pick them up on Friday and had a few minutes. So I went to the gas station and I bought Fanta, which the orange soda.
Yes.
I never let my kids have that. I bought Fanta and Nerds Rope. I don't even know what this is. It's like a Twizzler with Nerds wrapped around it.
Wow.
I bought them all for my kids and I put them in their seats. And I remember thinking, this is like 500 extra calories for the day and a ton of sugar. But like, it was just fun, you know, it's stuff they're never allowed to have. And it had been a week and they had done their responsibilities and done a good job. And so they got in the car and you should have seen especially my twins, you should have seen their faces. They were like, is this for us? And it was just fun. And it just yes. made me so happy. And I just love that idea of incorporating more fun, more play. I think that's so important. My last big question, I have some rapid fire questions for you, but my last big question for you is about the grownups. So we obviously are dealing with a lot and having to pivot quickly. And the last week, it just feels like the world is really, really, really heavy. And when you're a deeply feeling person like I am, it just starts to feel like a lot. And I'm just wondering for adults, like, is there anything that we need to make sure we're doing to manage our emotions in front of our kids and making sure, you know, not just in front of our kids, but like behind closed doors, making sure that we're taking care of ourselves and our mental health and protecting our hearts a little bit?
Well, you answered your own question, protecting our hearts, taking care of our own mental health, taking time for ourselves. I mean, I think I've been saying this throughout the whole pandemic, but I don't think it's ever been as important for parents to take care of themselves. I have, you know, we could talk about all the things that I've seen in the last, however long we've been in the midst of this now in kids in my office, but I would say hands down, I have never had as many parents in my office in tears.
And
I just think we are all, like we're talking about, we're all feeling it. We're feeling the intensity. And so you need to be going for walks. You need to be writing in your journal. You need to be doing fun things with friends, going on dates with your spouse. You need to be really, if you could get out of town, go out of town somewhere that feels safe. I mean, anything that you can do right now that fills you back up.
Yeah.
I mean, that is true always with parenting. I sometimes laugh about the, you know, the recovery program has so many great little sayings. Yeah. And one of them is, halt. Don't ever let yourself get too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired.
Oh,
that's when we make the most mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think that's where parents live so much of the time, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. You know?
I've never heard that. That is so true. Oh, it's so true.
Yes.
That's when you make the best choices.
Right. And that's true outside of a pandemic. We're living there even more so right now. Whatever you need to do to take care of yourself in these times, I think I have a dear friend who her kids just were all quarantined. And, you know, how does she find time in the midst of that? She's doing an amazing job if they have rest time every day for 2 hours. She's got to do some things in that those moments that fill her back up. And so to think about what does it look like for you to be receiving, because we give out of an overflow of what we receive. You're running on empty, you have empty to give.
Oh, my goodness. That is so good. The HALT acronym, that's great. That is,
I know.
That's why we don't grocery shop when we're starving, you know?
Exactly.
It's not good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. This has been so helpful and so good. I have three little rapid fire questions for you. You ready?
Okay.
So you just answer with whatever comes to your mind, okay?
Okay.
When you feel anxious, what is the first thing you do to feel more calm?
I have done a lot of research on anxiety in the last few years, and I'm working on another book. And so doing even more yesterday, and I cannot stress the importance of breathing and what it does to shift the blood flow in our brain and get us back into our thinking brain. So really that's the first thing I always do. And my favorite way to do it is called square breathing, where you breathe.
I was going to say box breathing. I love it.
Yeah, same thing. Yes. So literally whatever I'm doing, that's where I start always with square breathing or box breathing. Cause I think that's really the most important thing to get back into our thinking brain.
And for anybody who doesn't know what that is, isn't it like 4 seconds in and you hold, and then 4 seconds out and you hold?
Yes, exactly.
And 4-4-4-4.
Yes, because when we get anxious, our blood vessels constrict and it shifts all of our blood back to the amygdala. That's the fight or flight, which is why with kids, you think they're like a crazy person.
Right, right.
Because their thinking part of their brain isn't even getting blood. So it opens up those blood vessels and shifts it right back to the frontal lobe that helps us think rationally and manage our emotions.
That's so cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, what is something your mom said growing up that made you feel better?
My mom, you know, I think maybe it was out of her own anxiety sometimes. My mom was kind of the reverse of your daughter. I feel like my mom said, I love you as much as she said anything in my whole world.
Aww.
And I think with that, I just never doubted my mom's devotion to me, her care for me. And it was so simple. You know, she wasn't having all these elaborate things that she was doing. She just said, I love you all the time to me. And that meant so much.
That is so sweet. That is so sweet. And I think I've always heard that what we say to our kids eventually becomes their inner voice, like their self-talk.
Yes.
And
yes.
So like filling them up with those kinds of just affirming words, you know, helps.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the most helpful book that you have read this year?
Well, I just finished a book. This is probably in line with what we're talking about. I just read Fannie Flagg's new book. Have you ever read Fannie Flagg?
Oh.
She's a Southern novelist that's hilarious. She wrote Fried Green Tomatoes.
Yeah.
So it was not helpful in any deep way other than I needed a laugh. And it was self-care for me to read a funny, lighthearted book. And so that's been the most helpful here recently for me.
That is awesome. I've become a big fan of Audible. And so I listen to a lot of books, but I have to listen to mostly fiction because it's just like it's my way of self-care. It's my way of to stop worrying and thinking, overthinking everything and all of that. Well, I cannot thank you enough for this. It's been so good to connect with you.
It's been so fun to talk.
It's so, so, so important right now. And I just know that everything you shared is going to be so helpful for everybody. So tell everybody where they can find you, tell us about your most recent book and where everybody can find you.
Well, raisingboysandgirls.com is the website that I operate out of, along with my coworkers, David Thomas and Melissa Trevathan. And we've written some books together, but my most recent three have all been the anxiety books, Raising Worry Free Girls, Braver, Stronger, Smarter for elementary age girls, and then Brave for adolescent girls. Mm. And I'm trying to be really active on Instagram, helping as much as I possibly can. I'm going to take a long break once the beginning of school's over, but for now, just trying to put out as much as I can at Sissy Goff and Raising Boys and Girls both.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Sissy. I appreciate it.
Emily, thank you. It's so fun to talk to you.
You guys, I cannot tell you how much I needed to talk to Sissy today. Wasn't she amazing? Here is my favorite piece of information that I took from Sissy. We have to be the soft place to land for our kids, the safe space where they don't have to be alone with the information they're hearing, with their worries, with their fears, with the things that are keeping them up at night. What our kids need most from us right now is our time and our attention. And in order for us to have that to give to them, we have to be filling ourselves up so that we can pour out of the overflow. I'm so grateful to have had her here today. So thank you guys so much for listening. As we close out this episode, I would love to say a little blessing over you as we leave this time together and get back into our days. Even when it's painful, I hope you have the courage to keep looking at the hard things in front of you. Even when your arms are weary, I hope you find the strength to keep shepherding your little ones. And when the world feels too much, I hope you have your own soft place to land and somewhere and someone that makes you feel safe. As always, I like to leave a little tip to help you put what we've talked about today into practice. So here's your task for this week. If you're a parent, one of the best things you can do, no matter what's going on in the world, is to check in with your kids to see what kind of information they're processing right now. Just like Sissy said, sit down with them and ask them, what are they hearing on the news? How do they feel about that? What are the things they're worried about? Is there anything you're doing as a parent that's making it better or worse? How can you help? Even if you don't have all the answers right now, sitting down with your kids and asking them these kinds of questions really, really helps them feel heard. And when kids feel heard, they also feel safe. Thank you so much for listening to the Simplified Podcast. I hope today's episode helps you feel a little less anxious as you help your little ones feel a little more calm as well. You can find show notes for this episode at emilylay.com/podcast, where you can check out links and resources I mentioned here, and you can shop the Simplified brand of planners and products. Plus, for more simplicity tips, you can find me on Instagram at emilylay, as well as at simplified, and on YouTube at youtube.com/simplifiedbyemilylay. P.S. If you love books, I bet you would love my latest book. It's called Growing Boldly, Dare to Build a Life You Love. And it's in stores right now, wherever you buy books. Also, if you love this show, I hope that you'll hop over to Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast provider and do two things. One, rate the show, and two, leave a review, which helps the show find more people who might enjoy it. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Bye.